The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We're back! It's the Daycast. I'm Drew. That's Roth. And with us to preview the NBA draft is our own Giddy Nathan. Say hi, Giddy.
Hello. Yeah. There he is.
Once again, the energy levels are just through the fucking roof.
I like to start low so that I don't strain anything. I'm not a young man. I begin at this level, and then I'm speaking at a normal voice by the end of the podcast.
I like that. Sort of start low like a Stephen A. Smith rant. Well, obviously, it's a tragedy what's happened with the New York Knicks.
So I was
disgusted!
Oh, God.
Need more blubbering in there.
I was reading that article on the way, the New York article about Stephen A. on the way to work, and it has a preposterous in it that the writer put in there. And I want to believe
that this is it for me.
Yeah, that this is like that I finally
this
made
is
it.
A tribute to you.
It's the only way I'm getting in the New Yorker, man. It's like, it feels good.
I love it. I don't know how I feel about Stephen A. anymore. I for so long, I was like, he's screaming A, he sucks. You know, First Take sucks. Him and Bayless suck. But, you know, when he talks about the Knicks, I'm utterly enchanted.
Yeah, when our interests are aligned, he's amazing. He's really a vessel for all the terrible emotions bubbling up inside.
He's not, I don't think ever since, well, I don't know if he's insincere. He's equally passionate about every stupid thing that exists on Earth. But like when that somehow touches the thing that you're passionate about, you're like, hell yeah, I'm right there with you, man. But then the rest of it, where he's just like, whatever, yowling about the appetizers, you're like, you have to relax. Like you need to get your prescriptions medicated, like altered.
He can't talk about like Floyd Mayweather or anything like that.
No, yeah.
That's where he goes to full Mark Jackson. And the lasciviousness of the woman.
Oh, you know. God. Yeah. You can tell. I mean, there's a whole like sports is great for this too, where there's like people that are entertaining, but it's so much of that depends on you not knowing anything about the politics. Like you just can't hear it. Like the minute the illusion is punctured, you're just like, oh, wow, this guy's a fucking weirdo.
And also just bringing up the most bizarre combinations of subject and like person talking about it. Like, I don't know if you remember the Herm Edwards talking about Michael Sam. It was just like, it was so painfully awkward.
What was his, did he have like a really energetic take on it where he was like, I like the kiss because he really got after it.
I think he just had like this one canned phrase that he kept stumbling around and like, you know, just talking in the weirdest generalities about locker room issues and like, it was just not a good...
Media training seems like a weird thing. Obviously, all three of us are extremely well media trained, and that's why the podcast sounds so profesh every week. But there is like this thing where they clearly like teach these guys to be like, you know, when in doubt, just say hand down, man down. No one knows what it means. And like that, it doesn't actually work, but it's clearly like the best practices for it. And so you wind up with like, whatever, Herm Edwards trying to talk about like a major moment in inclusion in sports by being like talking about stick-to-itiveness or something, you know.
You know, we haven't talked about Herm, but essentially it's like someone put $1,000 in a safe deposit box and I get to open it this fall when he coaches Arizona State.
It's gonna be really fucking good, man.
It's amazing. First of all, the AD at ASU was his former agent, so it's like a retirement package for both of them.
Yeah.
And Herm just came right in and he's like, I don't know about these analytics. This is just and just no sense that he has any idea what the fuck he's doing.
Or that because like Gruden is like attacking his job he's also got completely outdated ideas, and I think they're gonna win like four games this year. But at least he's like Gruden, so he's gonna really be getting after it. Whereas like Herm Edwards clearly is just like, I didn't really want to coach a college team and I'm not really planning on doing it, but like they gave me an office. Like I got this polo shirt. It's got a sun devil on it.
Like, yeah, those videos kind of him just like kind of doddering around his office are so good.
It's like it's like the benignest possible version of the Trump thing where it's like, sure, I'll take this important job that pays really well, but like I'm not going to interrupt any of my personal habits to do it.
By the way, it's June and Gruden's already bitching about the CBA, so he's in prime form.
Yeah, he's going to, I can't imagine what it's going to, what like week eight is going to look like. He's just going to be like fucking super Scion levitating on the sidelines. He like cuts multiple punters every week.
We could have three damn practices a day. The CBA wouldn't be part of it. God damn shit. Fuck ass.
I do respect that he instantly washed his hands of Christian Hackenberg. That he like got one look at him and was like, you know what, buddy? I don't think you're cut
one
out for this.
Throw.
Yes.
It was one throw. Let's talk, because tomorrow night, or actually it'll be tonight once this podcast goes, it's going to be the NBA draft. So we have Gideon to be our NBA draft preview. Yeah. And
you can't see it, but he's got like a perfect Mel Kiper head of hair right now. Like, it's not even his normal haircut. It just happened since we started talking.
I just
talking.
Woke up with this.
Yeah. We woke up like this indeed.
So before we get into the draft order and the prospects involved, there are a couple things. One, first of all, of course, the mega trade that happened this morning between the Nets and the Hornets, the legendary Timothy Mozgov. He's being traded for Dwight Howard, the funniest player in the NBA. Just a clown, lovable clown.
You're half right. But yes.
I love that it took exactly 1 hour after him getting traded that his teammates started anonymously bad-mouthing him.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get that stuff trickling out all summer. It's going to be so funny.
Just the most irritating man in professional sports.
Who just happens to be a fucking colossus.
Right. It got to be a colossus. And, like, also, like, objectively one of the best players of his generation. Right. Like, you can't just, like, ignore him. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame, which means he's going to make a Hall of Fame speech that involves, like, him like having one of those things where you push a button and a fart sound happens and he's like, who did that? Like, that's gonna happen.
Just holding up memes to the mic.
Yeah, like, can you see this? He's about to do it.
Yeah, he's gonna come to the podium just as Urkel and he's gonna be like, hello. It really is amazing. I can't think of any player who was undone not by injury or by, you know, or by addiction or some other very serious personal thing. He was just undone by being a boob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he lived a pretty, you know, clean life in terms of partying and all that stuff. Yeah. But he was just...
Got many kids.
Intolerable.
Yeah, he's not that many kids. Yeah.
But, yes. But that's not illegal. It's not illegal to have kids. They didn't negotiate that into the CBA.
It did kind of shatter his evangelical vibe that he had coming into the league.
I mean, as a player, it was like he was a different thing before he hurt his back. But it's definitely true that like this whole like this last act of his career where he plays for like a different team every year and he shows up and he's like, I'm gonna shoot threes. Like, also, I've been working on a Chinese voice. Everyone's like, oh dude. Like, and that's just gonna continue. He was like good last year. Like, he was still average a double double for another decent, few years. Yeah. But man,
can you imagine having him as a dad and he like
oh, man.
Oh, he stole my yo-yo again.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, he shouldn't, like, constantly blaming you for, like, all the Skittles being gone. You're like, I'm 7 and I'm more responsible about my Skittles consumption than you. Like, this is terrible.
So we have a couple other things before the draft. First, Kawhi asked out of San Antonio. There were hints that he wanted to go to the Lakers. He also sat down for a meeting with Greg Popovich. So then my question to you, Giddy, is will Kawhi leave? Will he get his wish? Will he be able to go to L.A.? Or will he go somewhere else?
Yeah, I think he showed that he can just kind of protest his way to some kind of change. So unless they're willing to have him just sit out the entire season, I think he'll probably be able to force his way out one way or another.
I really can't believe that this is really happening.
Yeah, it's kind of
like, it's just fucking wild.
To
like,
this guy, too.
Yeah, of all the dudes. Yeah. Like, and we talk about this every week. That it's like, just because it's the Spurs, I'm like, oh, well, he and Popovich get along great because everybody knows their role or whatever. And it's like, no, he'll bag an entire fucking season and postseason for legit reasons, possibly not.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Wanting to go to the Lakers is something I don't get, period. But
Also, there was a report that someone in his camp said that his knee had ossified, which... sounds bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Some of the descriptions of his injury were pretty horrifying and beef jerky adjacent.
Yeah. Calling back to any of the, this is like a recurring Deadspin trope that anytime you're mentioning like a food stuff to describe a part of a guy's body, I think the Steph Curry crab meat ankle is the Deadspin classic.
No, we just opened it up and the thing looked like it was covered with crab meat.
I mean, that's when you hear any of that stuff, anything you can eat, you got to be like, no, man, just put the, like, close that suture back up and tell that guy to get an accounting degree. Like, it's done.
I don't like the idea of the whole knee hardening and freasing in place.
Yeah.
It's basically being made of quartzite for eternity. I don't know. It's strange to me, like, when we've talked about this, but like I know Carmelo forced his way to New York, so he got the destination he preferred. But I find it hard to believe that he could just choose his spot and they would somehow be able to accommodate him, particularly if it's a team like LA that I don't think has sort of equal assets to give up unless they trade
Kyle Kuzma or something. Yeah,
I feel like the package that they get in return for him is going to be surprisingly small.
Yeah, they have no leverage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, which is a shame because he's like, when he's healthy, he's fucking Kawhi Leonard, you know, but.
They have no leverage, and yet, I mean, I can imagine other teams would want his services. So, you know, I'm surprised. I would be surprised if he could really get his, every part of his wish, and not only get out of San Antonio, but go exactly where he wants to go.
I mean, I would be fascinated to see how that, like a documentary about how that relationship deteriorated over time. Just like two guys sitting quietly at like a steakhouse and like Kawhi, I don't know, just like bursts out in tears. What kind of conflict?
It really is bizarre too. Because again, this is like, I think I've mentioned this like at least once before, that like moment after they won the finals and they beat the Heat team.
Yeah.
And he like hugged Popovich and he's like, thank you for pushing me and all that. And I was like I haven't had like a coach player experience in my life. Like I'm old as shit. It's been like 25 years since I was like emotional about someone coaching me. And I saw that and I was like, yeah, that's real. Like that's terrific. Right. That's what it's all about. And then it was like 18 months later, it's like just not returning texts.
Right.
Like, and I don't know. Yeah, whatever. It would be interesting. That'll be like a 30 for 30 that airs in 5 years.
Yeah. And like obviously we're working from these totally like flattened stereotypes of these guys. But like I just can't visualize what those conversations were like.
The trade that I've liked for Kawhi in my head, just because I think it would be the strangest option, is he winds up in Boston and Gordon Hayward like plays 3 minutes for the Celtics and is sent to San Antonio on return.
Well, the other thing is that Popovich just might run hot and cold, you know? Like there might be some players where he'll sit down with them for like 9 years and be like, we are Rome, you know, the chickens have come home to roost, the president is Nero, you know, and just goes on and extended diatribes. And then with other players, he is like really curt.
Yeah.
Like just really dickish one word answers to every question. How's my dribbling? Fine.
That's what makes him so amazing is that he's had a long enough career that he's like really gotten along very well with Pau Gasol, but he's also gotten along really well with Steven Jackson.
It's a good range of personality.
Yeah. Like every type of NBA player that's been through there, he's somehow gotten something out of them.
Yeah.
Except for weirdly Richard Jefferson.
But personality-wise, he might be, you might not know which Popovich you're going to get. You might get the effusive one.
Yeah. I also get the weird sense that on Kawhi's side, there's all these references to his group.
Yeah.
Like, it makes it seem like he's this guy, like forever surrounded by this, like, inner tube of like uncles and just like miscellaneous dudes,
which again may be true, but anytime I hear that, I'm kind of like, oh, like you're fucking up and you're gonna blame the posse. It's been like the oldest NBA move forever. Like
that's been an NFL thing too. Yeah. That's been around forever, where it's like, oh, I don't know about the people he's talking to.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, it's always a black player. It's never like,
oh, yeah. Like Spencer Hawes's posse of like fucking groipers.
But it's always that. There's always, like, external forces are more pronounced with certain guys than with others, you know, which I find weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The Spurs have always seemed like an organization that really hasn't – I've not seen very many seams there, so it's weird. I have no idea how they're going to deal with something like this because they've never had, like, a distressed asset to dump in the way that, like, the Knicks perpetually have two.
That's just the wave.
Yeah.
Maybe the Spurs are always a mess and they're just really good at containing it. And they're all just fucking each other's wives just all the time.
Well, that was true, actually, right? Wasn't Brent Barry and Tony Parker?
Right.
Yeah, Tony Parker. Legendary teammate and, it, like, basically also somehow Pepe Le Pew at the time. Like, just running around all horny and skeeving on people.
Dude, the Spurs aren't immune, man. Yeah. They're not immune. Hang on, we're going to take a break and come right back.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, we're back. Okay, so before we get to the draft, I keep saying before we get to the draft because I don't know much about the draft, but I want to talk about LeBron real quick. And we've already gone over where we want him to go and all that stuff. But Giddy, what I want to ask you is, do you think LeBron has a plan? Like, do you think he's already called around and sort of arranged everything, all the chess pieces, so that he lands in like LA with Chris Paul and like five other guys he wants to be with?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird because he's kind of the first domino that needs to fall for all this other stuff to fall into place. But you have to imagine this dude has been spending the last 6 months like immaculately like researching this stuff.
Yeah.
And like at every, you know, road trip is stopping by and having all the dinners at unnamed bars and restaurants and whatever.
I like the idea of that he's just basically took this last season as like a chance for steakhouses to audition for him.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, what are you doing with cream spinach? How are you elevating it? Like, I'm interested. I'm listening. Yeah, just doing it.
Like, he checks the great schools rating of every like district.
Right. those are my favorite reports that he's been, you know, inquiring about the private schools in the greater Philadelphia area.
Right. That's always, those are so, like, I mean, there's been so many of them in so many different places, too. That's just, like, the best. I always like that they wind up having to call some, like, Monsignor to be like, no, we've not heard from them. Like, although, of course, we would welcome him to, like, the community at, like, St. Barnabas's Academy for the Tall. Like, you know, but.
I believe all of it, too. That's my favorite part about it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, wow, he is really, really going to Milwaukee after he had that sandwich.
Guy loves cheese. It's not bad.
The draft. The draft is Thursday night. The Phoenix Suns have the first overall pick. The woebegone Sacramento Kings pick second, and the Atlanta Hawks pick third. I can't even describe how irrelevant these first three teams are. It's amazing. It's a festival. Like, all, it's like they're sending the best players directly into oblivion.
The like, Suns are great for that because they've been bad enough for long enough that their entire rotation now is just like the island of misfit lottery picks.
Yeah.
Like, as you kind of like, you sort of forgot about, and then you're like, Alex Len.
Right.
Wow.
And they used to be exemplary, you know, when I was, you know, in college and during the Barkley era and stuff, they were sort of a model franchise, even though they never won. Even though they didn't win the title. But I remember Tom Chambers and obviously the dreaded Kevin Johnson and going over to Barkley and all that stuff. And they were a very consistent team, and now they're just shit.
Yeah. They were even fun as recently as like a few years ago when they had that three guard rotation.
That was a cool lineup.
With like Isaiah Thomas and Dragic and Eric Bledsoe, all of whom are extremely gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
I don't even think that team made the playoffs, but they were like at least.
I think
spunky.
They just missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, Giddy, who do you think is going first overall? Who do you hope goes first? Who's your favorite player in this draft? Who would be an absolute shit show if they get drafted?
I think it seems like pretty much the consensus that they're going to take Ayton first. And we've had some fun conversations where we just, you know, brain meme ourselves into like ridiculous takes. But I think at the end of the day, he's just an enormous human being.
Yeah, and he can play basketball really well.
And he can
like,
shoot pretty well.
Bad like, idea yeah. to draft somebody like that.
I don't think
that.
It's going to go too poorly for whoever ends up taking him. And he's probably going to go number one.
Yeah, it's not like an Anthony Bennett type thing where they're like at risk of overdoing it. Like he played at Arizona.
Right.
He's popular there. He's very good. Like
he's a pretty known quantity.
Yeah. I think the real wild card is how the Kings are going to.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a lot of fun.
How would they fuck up?
So they have the number two pick, which itself is kind of a godsend because I think just by record they were going to go, you know, somewhere around seven. But by all rights, they should just take an amazing player at number two. There are lots of good ones. You could take Doncic at number two, which I think most people would expect them to do. But also there's a whole camp that's like apparently Vlade Divac, which – if there's any way to make the conversation about Vlade Divac, we should.
Yeah, I think we should. It's very deftly steered in that direction. He's made some really fascinating decisions since taking over as a GM there. Mostly, he won't draft anyone shorter than him.
Or with a greater vertical leap.
Or with a greater vertical, which is, and they've got the results to prove it. It's really, everything's going great. I think the funniest one, the one that I know like keeps Patrick Redford awake at night, is the possibility that they take Michael Porter Jr. there.
I think that's
yes, yeah. Michael Porter from Missouri. Has there ever been a player from Missouri who's been worth a shit in the NBA?
He also played like
Chris Brewton
less than an hour of minutes there.
Yeah.
So like
53 minutes of inconsistent college basketball for a program that does not have a, I'm trying to think of a Missouri player that really worked out in the NBA.
And his, I think he said that he went there because his dad worked there.
Yeah.
And he like gave some quote about how he would have gone to Oklahoma or something, but.
Yeah, I don't know. What about Marvin Bagley? He's the one with the crazy dad, right?
He's got an ambitious dad. Yeah, say that.
He's got a sports dad.
But he's not got like a LeVar dad. Like, I don't think his dad will fuck things up. He's just going to be
give him time.
Yeah. But again, the Kings like an ambitious dad. They drafted Giorgios Papagiannis, and his dad's whole thing was like getting on Twitter and being like, Dragon Bender is fraud. Like, his dad was seriously slagging other guys.
Papagiannis?
Yeah, Papagiannis. Better ingredients, better draft pick.
But yeah, Michael Porter seems like kind of a weird guy.
Yeah.
I don't know, we have a tiny sample size, but all the draft knowers talk about him in kind of these ominous terms. And he gave a pretty funny quote the other day about like comparing himself favorably to both like KD and Giannis.
And then being like, I'm happy to be in the conversation. If I'm being mentioned in the conversation with those guys, like by myself, then like I'm clearly doing something right.
It was really impressive work.
Oddly, I enjoy the whispers about NBA draftees much more than NFL draftees, because the line I have from the ESPN expert Mike Schmitz is, the intel from his time at Missouri was very, very poor. He has a lot of questions to answer about how he's going to fit in an NBA locker room.
So this is just basically they're saying that like he's weird.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying to be around.
Or is he a bastard?
That's, I guess, a good question, right? Like, I just assume that he's, like, that it's like a Michael Beasley thing where it's like he doesn't know when to stop doing pranks or whatever. But that's the most benign possible version. Like, yeah, there is also the chance that it's, like, constantly carries a knife, like, brandishes it often. You're just like, well, I can see how that would hold him back.
Yeah, I infer real turdness when I hear stuff like that. Not that just, like, he's, like, sub-level Dwight humor, like...
Just, like, actively unpleasant.
Yeah.
And like,
and that is definitely like the way that you fuck up a big time talent. Like the real NBA lottery busts, it's like there's just guys that are just impossible people. And that's, I mean, it's not like Rashad McCants couldn't have played in the NBA. Like he was just like, his peers did not like him, you know, which is tough. But like, that is the way you blow it if you're like that good. I don't know that they'll find a way otherwise. Like fucking Bees is still playing.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate any major trades between now and the draft?
I feel like there's been some chatter that the Grizzlies might try to dump Chandler Parsons' contract and, like, you know, tie their pick to that. But they have a number four pick. I feel like you shouldn't throw that away lightly.
Especially if you're in the position that they're in where they're, like, really actively now trying to rebuild. Like.
Yeah. Well, they also have two max guys signed right now.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Maybe they can just add a young piece and actually do something, but...
Is Parsons, like, totally cooked? I was surprised to see that he actually played last year, like, a little bit and not well. But, like, I thought he was just, like...
Nightclubbing.
Yeah, or just, yeah, whatever, like, following the Chainsmokers on tour and, like, rehabbing his knee.
Yeah, I was thinking today about what it would feel like to be one of those, like, albatross contracts and, like, just know that you're crippling your team. Obviously, you're taking it to the bank, so it's kind of whatever in that sense. But, like, Joakim Noah, you're, like, from New York... You are one of the major reasons that your team is putrid. Like, how does that feel?
It doesn't seem like he's taking it that great. Although maybe he is. I don't know.
Like, he's last seen in the rainforest, like dying his beer blonde.
Yeah, and like whatever, like speaking with a Jamaican accent.
Yeah,
that he'd, like, put on for the occasion. Yeah, seriously. Which again, like that's not the worst way to handle getting $15 million.
I was kind of refreshed to see that.
Yeah, it's good. It's better than like moping around or like getting in a fight at One Oak.
Usually the NBA offseason does a nice job living up to its billing. So I just want some bombs, you know? I think you're going to get them. I believe in the NBA to just maximize its catty bitchiness. And give me just the complete and utter deck shuffling that won't make a goddamn difference in the long run, but is enough to keep me interested until the Warriors win the next title.
Right. Well, I think one of the funniest possibilities that we've been talking about is this would actually make a difference, but LeBron heading to the Celtics and somehow displacing Kyrie in the process. would just have maximal comedic value, and also I think create a team that would really compete with the Warriors, which I think is just two great outcomes.
Yeah, but I don't want the Celtics to be good.
I just don't want LeBron to be on the Celtics. Like, that just
feels kind of
wrong.
Like,
if you want to move the rest of the Celtics to another team with LeBron, if you want to start, like, reboot the Cincinnati Royals and then redistribute some things, it's fine. That'd be easier to me.
Yeah, no, I would like that. Like, it's always, like we've talked about, it's always the case with these Boston teams where the team itself is relatively likable, but it's just ruined by everything else around.
Yeah.
So. Let's take a quick break and come right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life one week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. We're back. Okay, before we get into the fun bag, it's a big movie weekend, or it's a big movie week because Incredibles 2 came out last weekend. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom comes out on Friday, and I actually just watched Jurassic World with my kids. No, Jurassic Park, not Jurassic World. The original Jurassic Park with my kids the other night. And I, you know, as much as that movie is revered because everyone I know saw it when they were five, so it was like the first time they saw a dinosaur movie and they just shit their pants. Like, yeah. I've seen a real dinosaur! it's got some issues, that movie. It's like the sets look like sets, like the dinosaurs look like theme park dinosaurs, like with latex faces and shit like that, you know?
I haven't seen it recently, but it doesn't surprise me that I'm more surprised that the effects look bad than that, like, it would seem cheesy. Because, like, I was, you know, again, as a bona fide old, I was like probably 12 or 13 when I saw it. And, like, I liked it well enough, but I was definitely aware when I was watching it that it was like cheesy. Like, it wasn't really very scary. It was like kind of like corny, and the plot didn't make much sense.
Mm. Well, one of the things about it was, and Roger Ebert, I remember he gave it 2 stars, and it was one of those first instances where people were so hyped up for the movie that they were pissed at the critic for dumping on it before they even had a chance to see it.
The future we now inhabit.
Yes, it's the future we now inhabit. And the whole thing was Spielberg, when he made Jaws, obviously they had tons of production problems. The fucking shark didn't work. And so you didn't see the shark until later in the film, which actually helped build the suspense. And his beef with Jurassic Park was that you saw the dinosaurs right away. So he wanted to establish more characters before and some suspense before you got to the actual seeing of the dinosaurs part. And so, you know, what? Because they give you the brontosaurus right away, like within like 5-10 minutes or some shit like that. That sort of neuters it and neuters the suspense. So that was his beef with it. My problem is that all the other movies have been bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and worse. I mean, I didn't see the the rebooted ones. Did you see those, Gideon?
I haven't seen anything beyond The Lost World, I don't think.
I saw Jurassic World and it was shitty, and it had more product placement than any movie I've ever seen in my lifetime.
That's like, good shit. Like, everybody's constantly like, take a break, enjoy a Coke.
Oh, and by the way, I have to say this because I think Leach reviewed it today. Leach has takes that I take issue with, but his worst take by far was that if there was a real Jurassic Park, no one would go.
Come on, man.
Right?
Did that work its way into a review where he was like, well, the hardest thing to imagine is all these people wanting to see real dinosaurs?
We would not.
Yeah. No, that was his Jurassic World review. He's like, nobody would go to this park. I was like, you fucking kid.
People would walk directly into the raptor pit.
Yeah. I would honestly, that would be an honor to be devoured by a dinosaur. Like, if that's what it came to, if it was like you had a good vacation, like you're going, like, and you don't want to fly back, like maybe you're on American or something like that. Yeah. Then you would, sure. I wouldn't mind being devoured by a tyrannosaur. On.
What better way to go? Yeah. I mean, honestly.
That is one of the poorest takes I've ever heard in my life. I'm like, honestly in awe of it. I'm going to keep going back to it all day.
I say it with affection. I'm not doing a drive-by on Leach just to do a drive-by. Like, it's a genuinely bad take, and I'm almost in awe of its lack of logic and reason.
It's like the take that soccer players are unattractive that Tim Burke busted out yesterday.
Yeah, that was a really...
What?
Yeah, that was...
You didn't see that one. Oh, okay.
That was yesterday in Slack. Everybody spent an hour yelling at Burke about, like, he said that soccer players were unattractive, and it was just this tidal wave of heterosexual sports writing males being like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? He kept sharing like pictures of like guys from the Polish team looking sweaty.
Yeah, he'd like take these perfect screenshots of the like 1 millisecond where they're not perfectly coiffed.
Yeah,
and, like,
just unconscionably unethical journalisms.
Yeah, truly fake news.
Yeah, I'm mad. As someone who aspires to look like a soccer player, you know, that's unacceptable.
I do like how dandified they are, that they're all just like, everyone is just fucking laid, like perfect,
right.
Like getting their hair cut like instant, like 30 seconds before they walk out for the anthems. But like, that's part of the fun.
One other movie thing is there was an incredible, and I excuse the pun, there was a review of The Incredibles 2 in The New Yorker from Anthony Lane, who apparently just has an enormous boner for Elastigirl because the entire review was erotic, and I can't decide if it's a bad review or a great review because more reviews should just be horny. Like, at least it gives you something to do, you know?
It's a masterpiece of honesty. I think, like, the only thing that bothers me about the review is that he's, you know, like, projecting it all onto some, like, anonymous third person. If he'd just written it, you know, I went and saw The Incredibles, and my enormous boner sent popcorn kernels flying into the air. I think it would have been a lot more, you know, respectable as a piece of journalism.
I don't know if that's
this is true. This is true because the passage I'm going to read you is in the second person, which makes it very because like he's trying to incept his horniness into me, and I'm not having it. It says, "All right, I'm going to
just won't own it."
It's take your seat at any early evening screening of Incredibles 2 in the coming days. Listen carefully, and you may just hear a shifty sound. As of parents squirming awkwardly beside their enraptured offspring. And why, kids? Because mommy just leaned over to daddy and whispered, is it me? Or does Mrs. Incredible kind of look like Anastasia from 50 Shades of Grey? You know, the girl in the red room with the whips and all. Mm-hmm. And daddy just resting his cooling soda firmly in his lap and, like Mr. Incredible, trying very hard to think of algebra. As for how daddy will react later on, during the scene in which Helen and the husky-voiced Evelyn unwind and simply talk woman to woman, I hate to think, but watch out for the flying popcorn.
You gotta, that's...
He's also citing these images as if they're things we can relate to or that are tropes, recognizable
the
tropes.
Classic flying popcorn because you got a boinging boner.
The classic cooling off your boner with the soda.
as old-fashioned a move as there is. That's why you gotta bring a big jug of soda around with you in middle school because you're constantly getting some sweatpan issues. It's, first of all, also, he's British, and I really appreciate you not reading that in a British accent because it would have been, I think, somehow even worse.
You would have heard us squirming in our seats.
Yeah, seriously. A shifty sound. As
to me, the whole
wiener moving.
To me, the whole paragraph has a pencil mustache. You know?
Oh yeah, it's very much so. The eyebrows just furiously pistoning up and down the whole time. Like, whoa! It's also amazing. How does he watch a movie with actual people in it?
I don't get it.
If he's that horny for like the thick cartoon, like, how do you make this work?
It's untenable. You can't go through life like this.
Just kind of like Steve basically cannot be conscious for any movie with Scarlett Johansson in it. Like, he's like the first 45 seconds.
It's just he watches a pixelated version.
Yeah, he's like watching Spice. He needs to see it that way.
By the way, who the fuck goes from Mrs. Incredible to Dakota Johnson? Where is that?
Yeah.
They look nothing alike.
God, it's also like, I don't understand. I mean, maybe that's him trying to make he makes a lot of bad jokes. He's a terrible film critic. But I think he's playing to his audience there, that he's like, what is the touchstone of sex in movies right now? But yeah, it doesn't work at any level. There's no sense in which that comparison makes any sense.
We did research too, and it turns out there is an entire subculture of people online who are horny for Mrs. Incredible, presumably because she wears thigh-high boots, which, all right, understandable.
Yeah, fair enough.
But the amount of cosplay yearning for Elastigirl is quite it's quite revealing about everything, really, about this entire point in history.
Someone dug up a great YouTube video yesterday where this guy, you know, surveys the entire field of thick cartoon characters. He's some kind of YouTube personality. Just constantly referring to the wagon on Patrick Star.
Got that wagon.
Yeah.
That's definitely normal.
Yeah.
And I would say that was the first word that popped into my head, but there's definitely a lot of other ones. Cool. It's good. I don't want to kink shame anybody, but like, and I understand the idea of like horniness is one of the, you know, the great gifts and the great curses that the good Lord gave us. But like, you're definitely going to want to think about people before you think about cartoons, in my opinion. That would be my advice to anybody that was feeling like they wanted to get horned up by something. Like, just, you know, what about something that actually exists?
No.
All right, no, fair.
That's the whole point, is that they don't exist.
Yeah, I guess that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
That's right. It's like if you're that scared of rejection that you're just like, well, Marge Simpson would fuck me.
No, but it's not only that. It's like cartoon curves and stuff like curves that just don't happen in real life.
Yeah, like
that's the whole thing. I'm in a prior online life, I may or may not have ranked Disney princesses based on attractiveness.
Oh, dear. Is that on our website somewhere?
Might be in a thumb bag. It was like, bruh, Pocahontas was stacked, bruh. I don't stand by that.
I stand by the ranking, but right. I do not stand by
the last two spots.
Oh, let's take a break and come back. It's time for the fun bag. Giddy, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Well, that's too bad, because I'm going to give this question to Roth, because it's a baseball question.
Right? Oh, okay.
Chris writes in, he says, in the spirit of the baseball infield shift, why not move catchers to second base when nobody's on base and there are less than two strikes? So what if the pitches go to the backstop? Put the catcher back in position when you get to two strikes or if there's a base runner. I'm going to try this on my little league team next year. Coach of the year!
This is what I admire so much. All the best fun bag questions have this this element to them of like, clearly this man is high, right? Which is fine, and I support his work in that. But also like, is high in a productive way. Like all the times that I've been high enough to been like, why don't we move the catcher to short center field? Like I haven't even I you just kind of sit there and chew on your lip.
This is an actionable high thought.
Yeah, he did it.
He's coaching a little league team.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons not to do that. I think the umpires would get upset, for one thing, if they just constantly had fastballs fired at their beans nonstop. But other than that, no, it's not bad. I mean, adding an extra infielder. I also think it would be funny to see a catcher in, like, full gear out there, like,
just standing around.
Yeah, like, whatever, trying to make a play in the hole, like, sliding to catch something.
I mean, it is funny when you think about it. The umps always use the catcher as a human shield. I think maybe it's time, maybe it's time to grow up a little for the ump.
This could be, if there are robot umps in our future, and I wouldn't bet against it, honestly, like, at least for balls and strikes, then maybe this is where we're headed. Maybe we gradually are going to turn into cricket.
Are you pro shifting, or do you think they should limit shifts?
I wouldn't say that there needs to be a rule limiting it. I think everybody could stand to chill out with it this is a lame answer, but sort of on both sides of it. Like, people get too upset about it, but also teams are definitely doing it too much. Like, I don't understand I get that it gives you an advantage in certain sorts of setups, but, like, it is also the sort of thing where, like, you'll see a team, I'm thinking of particularly of the Mets last night, that just, like, you could listen to this podcast at any time during the baseball season, and the Mets last night will still hold up as a critique. It seems like it's the sort of thing that, I don't know, like, baseball doesn't do groupthink well, or it does it too well, that, like, it's a new idea. There is some merit to it. Nobody really knows how to use the brakes yet.
Right. It's a new toy and they want to play with it a lot.
And that what you wind up doing there is, like, I don't know, it just seems like it makes it harder in some ways. Like, the idea, like, especially, ball players are people too. They grew up with, like, a certain series of habits and stuff like that. And, you expect that if you get a player to roll over on a ball to, like, a certain, like, area nearish to second base, like, you expect that to be an out. But if the second baseman is standing behind second because it was a right-handed batter that screwed it up or whatever, then, like, I don't know. I imagine that would piss me off even more than, like, losing one of the few precious outs that you get during a game.
Giddy, Andy writes in, I have an issue with penalty kicks being counted towards individual goal scoring totals. This is mostly due to the fact that the person that is the foul committed against them does not have to take the kick. So whoever is fouled from, say, Portugal will have the penalty kick taken by Ronaldo. I think the goal should be credited to the team if you can choose who takes it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not a big soccer knower, but I find it bizarre that you can just kind of plug in whatever player you want there. Because it's not, like, totally analogous to, like, I don't know, like a technical foul. In basketball, I feel like jump ball would be more the analogous situation where it's like the actual players who are involved in the squabble would, once it's reset, they're the ones involved in the action.
I wonder if it could lead to, if they made the player take it, if it would lead to, like, some weird, like, Hack-a-Shack scenarios.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Where, like, it seems like whatever, you don't want Ronaldo to do it, so you just, like, one of his guys, like Joao, or just, I don't know, I'm just making up names. That seems sounds Portuguese to me. But, like, yeah, you just like slide into his ankles and be like, good luck, man. Like, I'd rather I'll take my chances with you.
I get why that would, as a bona fide rationale for doing it, even though the average penalty kick goes into the net anyway. So the other thing I would suggest as a complete dipshit American who just helicopters into the sport every once in a while.
Yeah, that's like, that should be our
motto. Yep.
What if a goal scored on a penalty kick was only worth half a goal?
Only break ties or something?
Yeah, that would be interesting just in the sense I think the scores would be really hilarious. Like a 0.5, 0.5 tie between like, whatever, Ghana and the Ukraine. That's like some real World Cup shit. That's how you break through to the American market.
I think it's a little bit of a cheat to get the penalty kick. The way, the way that soccer purists don't like penalty kicks to decide a game at the end of the World Cup after overtime. A penalty kick, if it's a borderline call,
Yeah.
Like maybe 0.75.
It should be negotiable.
It's up to the ump's discretion. Yeah.
Yeah, I want like more haggling. I want to see what the coaches actually do. Like, they should get out there and be like,
yeah, get the managers involved.
Yeah.
By the way, this is absolutely the time of year when there are at least 5 op-eds from American columnists bitching about the offsides rule in soccer, as if they just discovered it.
Yeah, like that's the thing that's holding it back from keeping like 65-year-old like Jeff Beefman from like coming around on soccer.
Right, where he's just like, well, he beat him. You got beat. Tough shit.
In American sports, it's called winning. Yeah. I mean, it was weird, though, with soccer. I never, again, because I don't really watch it much except for these 4 years. Like, there's still, I get the offsides rule, and I'm not mad about it. But a lot of the stuff, they're like, trying to, like, the begging for foul calls and stuff like that, the, like, rolling around and screaming if somebody, like, accidentally slaps you. Like, I still am not used to, like, I see it, and I instinctively kind of am just like, ugh.
Yeah, but you know what, though? The NBA players do that, and NFL players ask for PI flags all the fucking time. You know?
That is true. I mean, as Goody said, like a global culture flop. Like, I've been inured to, like, doesn't seem as bad to me because I've watched, like, Manu Ginobili go hurtling backwards, like he got shot out of an
airworm.
Yeah. So it's like, that's the gateway drug.
Yeah.
I think there's part of it where it's like you see it and you recoil because, like, you just instinctively want to think Americans are tougher. We never do that, you know? Whereas it's just sort of part of the game. And if you accept it as part of the game, it doesn't get my dander as much as I used to.
Yeah, a lot of I've seen also enough instances this cup of just dudes getting lit up by tackles. So
yeah,
it's got to be painful. All that.
Yeah, it hurts to get kicked, man. It sucks.
Yeah.
My son's a big soccer head, and I was watching a game, and I was like, that guy's flopping. And my son turns to me and he says, Dad, it's called diving.
You got soccer knowned by the kid. Yeah, getting kids playing too. It's not.
I got absolutely fucking served.
I was asked, what team are your kids supporting? Does he have one, or is he just watching it?
In this one, he was supporting Germany because my wife is half German.
Oh, so there you go.
Michael writes in, Giddy, how much would LeBron's game suffer if he had one below the knee prosthetic leg? I think he'd still be one of the top 10 players in the NBA. Two prosthetic legs, top 25.
No, I think he'd get better.
Yeah,
his Oscar Pistorius Eurostep would be unstoppable.
It would be like
so explosive,
bounding off that weird like graphite thing and flying 12 feet in the air. Yeah, that's like, because that's the technology's gotten so good at this point, right? That like aren't like the sprinters in the Paralympics are like a second off what like Usain Bolt is.
Yeah, Dennis was talking about, you know, guys whose careers actually, you know, improve relative to the competition. And I think, the technology is kind of insane. He was saying that regulation, they don't really know how to handle that situation because the technology is so new.
The idea of like a RoboCop version of LeBron that plays for another 25 years, like
kind of awesome.
Adding like progressively more like cybernetic elements is definitely like,
and then eventually his son is just there.
It's amazing. Right. I'm into it.
Like doing repairs on the sideline.
Yeah.
By the way, to answer the question seriously, if he had a prosthetic leg, he would not be one of the top 10 players in the NBA. And if he had two prosthetic legs, he probably would not be able to play in the league anymore.
I don't know. I feel like I could see him slowing his game down enough where, like, you know, all the cool stuff he does, playmaking is somehow not affected by that.
Yeah, like he'd play like Sabonis at the end. Like
His knees were shot by the time he got to the NBA.
It's just going.
Cool, but living with a prosthetic is very difficult.
Oh, I'm sure.
Playing 82 games on a prosthetic might be problematic for your knee and might actually cause some pain and discomfort. So.
I mean, all true enough. I'm saying I'm not ruling shit out with LeBron.
Yeah, anything's possible.
I think he'd have a hard time. I think it would be very. There's a reason. There's no amputees in the NBA right now. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? Like, although you know, I can't help but think if I rounded up a team entirely of amputee troops, that they
no,
they could beat the Warriors.
They could. I think because that's the real Warriors,
right?
Why do we honor these warriors, but not these warriors?
We have a Trump question of the week, although the Trump question of the week is probably not as funny this week, but we have to, you know, adhere to tradition. So, Giddy, I'm going to... And it's a fitting one, given what's going on this week. Pete writes in, assuming the world's still around in 21 or 2025, whenever there's a new president, how do you think the new president will feel about sleeping in the same bedroom as Trump did? Seems like the first thing they'd think every night is like, Jesus Christ, Donald Trump definitely ate a Big Mac in here. Not good vibe. Has Trump permanently sullied that house part of the White House? Has he ruined it for whoever comes next?
It's hard for me because this is actually kind of the least offensive part of the Trump presidency to me. It's just like kind of these quaint images of him wandering around in the dark in a night robe, just like holding a candle.
Yep.
like these are the least destructive and poisonous things that he's doing on a day-to-day basis. So I don't know. He's definitely sullying kind of on a spiritual level everything, but
yeah.
In terms of the actual physical structure of the White House, I don't know.
I feel like aesthetically he's going to put a real stamp on it that's going to make it tackier. But again, it's like – it's hard because I was thinking about this on the way here because I love the Trump questions every week. Like this has been an extraordinarily shitty week.
Yeah.
Yes.
And and it's hard because he's not – like he still does like dumb – like just the ridiculous shit that he hugged a flag the other day. Like he's a fucking oaf and he is hilarious, but also like it's really bad. He's doing really bad things. Like people are suffering for it. Not to say that the question is, you know, I mean, whatever we ask for him, but anyway, to answer that question, he's going to make it look really gaudy. And I think they're going to have to redecorate everything.
They're going to hose it down.
Yeah. Because he's going to replace everything with like marble couches and be like the most premium marble, you know, just because he's a fucking idiot and he doesn't have any sense of what's
like,
good.
Give a $100 million contract to one of his buddies to do the job.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's all just going to have like shag carpeting everywhere.
Yeah. I think he's left a lasting stain on a lot of things. The anthem, of course, the flag. I think that I as much as I think he would sort of his presence would be annoying to whoever comes next. I think they would view it as an opportunity to get a fresh start.
Yeah.
And I think I don't think whoever ascends to that office is going to be powerful enough and have a big enough ego to think that they can put their own stamp on the place anyway. So with that said, I would strongly recommend everyone donate to Racist Texas, RAICESTexas.org. When I told my kids I donated to racists, they said, "Why'd you donate to racists?"
I know. It is hard. No. There has to be a better way to pronounce it. I had the same sort of deal, like the beads deal with Kate when I was explaining who I'd just given our money to. But
no, they help families that have been separated at the border. They help pay for their bond money and for lawyers to get them back together. And that's a very good cause. So I would urge you to donate to them. The other thing I want to say before we go is I want to say a goodbye to our compete people, Eric Van Allen, Maddie Myers, and fabulous Dennis Young. They were all so wonderful, and I just want to give a shout out to them before we go. And one last thing, we didn't talk about it last week, but Anthony Bourdain died, what was it, Friday? So it was the week before Friday. And we didn't really talk about it, but I didn't know if you guys had any small Bourdain memories you wanted to share before we shuffled off.
Yeah, I have the fondest memories of, you know, posting up on the couch Sunday nights and watching his show with my parents. I think the general take on him is that he increased empathy. And, you know, he was actually getting viewers to look outside of the little pigeonhole lives that they live. And I think that had huge value and is also the opposite of everything else that is going on in the world now. And he just lived kind of a beautiful, amazing life. Like his life on a week-to-week basis was just so cool.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like a work of art in itself.
I mean, sort of similar for me that like, I mean, I was by no means like a religious watcher of his show. I enjoyed it. I would watch the Travel Channel one more than the CNN one for some reason. I guess just because I avoid cable news, like just for as a self-care maneuver. Like I just those
principle.
Channels are, might as well be blocked on my TV. But yeah, I mean, what Kitty said, and then also just the fact that he was improving as a person, you know, that it was clear that he'd started as this kind of like overstated caricature of like swinging dick chef bro. I mean, he's always very smart and a very talented writer, but then he just like, he grew into this like, you know, sort of astute, but then also like observant, you know, citizen of the world, which is like, you know, kind of, that's something to aspire to. Beyond the, you know, the other stuff about like whatever, listening to people and, you know, looking around and enjoying things that are outside of your experience.
Right.
I had a couple of favorite memories. One was he took an ATV up a sand dune and he went directly up the sand dune, but then he made the mistake of turning and the whole thing toppled over him. And so he went ass over tea kettle and the whole ATV went with him. And they would replay it. They would replay him getting owned by this ATV because he had this great self-awareness. So he would joke about almost getting killed by this ATV. And then the other thing was that they always had a fishing segment, and he was always
he never caught anything.
Like, oh god, fucking fishing segment. And they would show like when they couldn't catch anything, they would show them throwing the fucking stunt fish in, and then they would hoist it up and they'd be like, "We caught it."
Yeah, I remember that one in like Morocco or Tunisia when he was there. That was like the most obvious fake one, and it like floated to the surface. And he was like, "Oh, great!"
Like, it's absolutely dead. Like, he did. He had a great, you know, it was, I think it's always good with in TV and radio when there's sort of a self-awareness of how the show is going. Mm-hmm. like how this podcast is going, you know, like, when there's, you know, you're not always presenting, you know, you're aware of how everything's going as you're filming it and all that stuff. And you invite people in. I think Patrick Redford did a really good one about the disastrous Romania episode that he filmed.
Yeah.
And they acknowledged during the whole episode that it was a complete shit show.
Yeah.
Because he was basically just getting pranked by his buddy nonstop, right? Like, he was like, you know, another thing we like to do here is, like, I blast you with a super soaker full of vinegar for an hour. And he's like, okay, that's what you like.
Anyway, he'll be missed. And
yeah, for real.
Anyway, this show is produced by Daria Moore. Our executive director of audio is Mundana Mafidi. We featured music by Corbin Hayes. The episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. If you have a question you want to send us, send a voice note or email to deadcast@deadspin.com or tweet us using the hashtag deadcast. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Panoply, NPR1, or wherever else you get your podcasts. That's it, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.